a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
On the internet, so beware, everything you say is saved for posterity's sake. And welcome everybody to House Ag, and remember to turn off your cell phones and put them on vibrate, and I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Cronin, Frerichs,
here.
Hoffman,
here.
Kopp,
here.
Olson,
here.
Shrimp,
here.
Sly,
here.
Sorensen,
here.
Street,
here.
Van Gerpen,
here.
Verschio,
here.
Vanneman, Bruner.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Quorum is present. Minutes of the previous meeting. Everybody happy with them? Motion by Representative Street. Second by Representative Cronin. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. Minutes are approved. Reminding everybody, if you're going to testify today, to sign in. Our Mr. Lowe is standing. Our shining example of how to sign in today. So, and if you have handouts, the pages will be here to do that. With that, we're going to maybe shuffle the schedule around a little bit to accommodate a senator who's going to pitch Senate Bill 1. I think we'll just put Senate Bill 1 to the top of the calendar, and we'll go from there. So with that, I would open testimony on Senate Bill 1, clarify, repeal, update, and make form and style revisions to certain statutes related to the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. Are there proponents to Senate Bill 1?
Good morning. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the House Ag Committee. It's a pleasure to be here. Tom Hansen, Senator from District 22, representing Beetle Hand and Girard counties. And this is with regard to Senate Bill 1. You've heard a lot about cleanup bills, and this fulfills every aspect of that description. Last summer, I had the privilege of chairing the committee charged with the responsibility for the review of the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. It provided the legislators with an in-depth look at the structure and functions of that part of the executive branch of state government. One of the direct benefits of this review was an opportunity to look at all of the portions of our code dealing with this department. We occasionally find statutes that have not been touched for several years. Some of them go back to 1939 when our entire code was rewritten. There were sections that are wordy, difficult to read, and confusing to understand. This bill is presented for the sole purpose of making style and form changes consistent with the manner of drafting used today. There are no substantive changes here, and I would suggest that if any member of this committee would like to modify anything relative to policy in the 39 pages of this bill, that you introduce a separate bill rather than amending this bill. I would like to commend and publicly thank the members of the Game, Fish, and Parks Agency Review Committee for coming together several times last summer and for offering this piece of legislation. I thank you, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you, Senator. Are there other proponents to Senate Bill number 1? Welcome, Secretary.
Morning, Representative Bruner, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I come to before you to speak in favor of SB 1, as Senator Hansen just outlined. We worked closely with the LRC staff and with the members of the committee this summer in an effort to improve the code, how it reads, and without making the kinds of policy changes that Senator Hansen referenced. So without repeating many of the things that he said, I would just come before you to let you know that the department is in full support of passage of this bill. Thank you. I'll stand by as well.
Thank you, Secretary Vonk. Other proponents of Senate Bill 1? Hearing none, I would like to give our own Tom Magadins a minute to explain. He actually did all the work on this, I understand, a good share of it anyway, and kind of explain the procedure he went through and some of the details in there. So, Tom, go ahead.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I did most of the work on this last summer. LRC is directed by the E-Board every time that there's an agency review committee in the summer to do a cleanup bill like this for that agency's statutes. And that's what we did with this one. It's an opportunity to update archaic legalistic language, modernize, clarify it, break up long, long sentences and paragraphs and so on. And just, I mean, some of that's for style. Some of it's actually to make it more readable and understandable. If you get some really old statutes, sometimes it's virtually impossible to know what they're trying to say. This is our only chance to update language. Now, in regular bills, we'll update existing statutes, but we're only restricted to the sections of law that are in that bill. We have no power to just go out into the code and make changes, and this is our only chance to do something like this on a large scale, so we do that. The Game Fish and Parks statutes are probably in better shape than some other agencies because most of them are newer. They've been revised more frequently and more recently. So this bill is maybe half the size of some of the bills that we've done like this. What we find in LRC is language in a code from the 1980s and after is usually in pretty good shape. Before that, it gets a little shaky, and when it's quite old, there are some problems with it. As Secretary Vonk said, we did meet with Game Fish and Parks on the bill, and the department worked with us through the summer, and that was a good effort. As far as the content of the cleanup bill, there are no substantive changes, no policy changes. Do you want me to go into the types of things that we do in these?
Maybe a little bit. You don't need to dwell on a lot, but go ahead. Just
there's a couple of things. Representative Van Gerpen mentioned in 1939 Senator Hansen mentioned in 1939 when the code was completely redone. There's a chapter 2-14 called the construction and effect of statutes, and in there there are some directions actually as to how to interpret our statutes and even how to draft them. A couple in particular, there's 2-14-6 says that words used in the singular number include the plural and the plural the singular, except where a contrary intention plainly appears. What that means is we write in the singular in South Dakota statutes. We don't have to say any person or persons. We can just say any person, and we're covered. There's another section that says words used in the present tense include the future as well as the present, so we don't need to say any person who has or will have. If we just say any person who has, we're covered, and that's by statute. So that simplifies our drafting, and we try to get things in that sort of shape. Try to break up long sentences, gender neutral. We don't use he or she. Usually what we do if there's an old reference to a he or his, we'll repeat the noun, the secretary, the property owner, something like that. Archaic legalistic language, you'll find a lot of in old statutes. You'll find there on, there of, there from, there with, therein, heretofore, herein before stated, aforementioned, said, such. Well, the problem there is if you say thereon or thereof and you have a long paragraph, pretty soon you don't know what you're referring to. It's better to repeat the noun and be clear as to what we're talking about. Shall and may, one that always confuses people, we don't use not or a negative with shall. It's actually a stronger prohibition to say may not or no person may than it is to say shall not. So if we're changing shall not to may not, we're not making it weaker, we're making it stronger. Believe it or not. Try to use if rather than where or when unless we're actually talking about a time or place. If rather than provided that. Another one that happens sometimes, it has to do with agency law. People will want to write the secretary or the secretary's designee. You don't need to write the secretary's designee. If the secretary has the power to direct someone beneath him to do something, you can just say the secretary. So those are the kinds of questions or the kinds of changes that we're making in here. We're definitely not attempting to do anything substantive, but that's the kind of things that go into these cleanup bills and also the other cleanup sections in other bills.
Thank you very much. That helps a lot, I think. Representative Van Gerpen.
Just to add to that, I'd like to, these folks don't hear many compliments, I'm sure, but Mr. Magwist does a super job. And when I give him a document to draft, I know it's going to come back ready for presentation, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Seeing no other proponents, are there opponents to Senate Bill 1? Seeing none, no rebuttal would be necessary. We'll go to committee questions. Seeing none, committee discussion and or action. Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move due pass on this bill.
We have a motion due pass, seconded by Representative Sly. Comments on that motion? Anybody? Representative Betty Olson.
I do have a comment. I was one of those, that committee this summer. There aren't very many times that you're going to notice my name on the top of one of these game and fish bills. I want you to make note. I think this is a wonderful bill. I will be voting for it.
other comments? Yeah, and I guess I served as vice chair of the this committee last summer, and I want to thank Senator Hansen. Did a great job guiding us through some touchy subjects and keeping us on track, and it was a lot of fun at the same time. So appreciate the job you did, and thank you for bringing this bill. And with that, we have a motion on the floor. Do pass. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Secretary, call the roll.
Representatives Cronin.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Schrempf.
Aye.
Fly.
Aye.
Sorensen.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Versio.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have 12 members voting yes.
Motion carried. Senate Bill Number one will receive a due pass vote.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Would it be appropriate to suggest that Representative Olson carry this bill on the House floor?
It would be appropriate. However, I see my name is listed as the first name there, so perhaps I will do that. Representative Sly?
I move consent calendar.
Second.
Can that be done?
I'm going to hold off on that.
Okay.
I'd like to just say a word or two on the House floor pitching it, and if anybody else would like to too, that's on the was on the committee or in this committee, that would be certainly appropriate. But I think it'd just be nice to be able to say something and maybe a few kudos to the committee and whatnot on the House floor. So, thank you anyway. I appreciate that. Thank you, Senator Hansen. With that, we will go back to the top of our calendar, and House Bill 1093 to revise the boundaries of the James River Water Development District. The long-awaited House Bill 1093. Are there proponents?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Justin Cronin. I'm representative from District 23. House Bill 1093 is not so much a revision, but a correction. Last year, this bill was passed with an error, including Edmonds County into the James River Water Development District. The Edmonds County Commission voted unanimously against joining the James River Water Development District, and this bill is just a correction, deleting the word Edmonds in line 7. It's pretty straightforward. This was a mistake and unauthorized by the citizens of Edmonds County, and I urge you to vote do pass. Thank you.
Are there other proponents to House Bill 1093?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I am Bob Wilcox with County Commission Association, and I am the cause of this problem, I guess, quite frankly. A little recap of what did happen last year when Representative Dale Hargens, who was a prime sponsor of the expansion of the James River Water Boundary the boundaries, we were looking at a number of counties that were going to be affected. And we agreed at that time that we would go ahead and poll each of these counties to see whether they wanted in the James River Water District or whether they chose to stay out of it. And as Representative Cronin indicated, Edmonds County had indicated they did in fact not care to participate. In fact, they were the very first email that I did receive from the counties. And that being said, as things progressed in the session, that email kind of was missed by myself, and Edmonds County appeared in the bill. As the bill was well into the process, I discovered the problem, and I went to Representative Hargens at that time. And I said, we have a problem. We're going to have to turn this thing around and start over. And then we both realized that we were late in the session. We thought, well, it would be best to go ahead and proceed, and we would come back in the 2009 session and correct the error. And, in fact, the nice thing about that is Edmonds County, this bill went into effect January 1st of 2009. So Edmonds County has been in the James River Water District for 1 month and 10 days. There's been no financial impact to the county, and so this seems to be the least seamless a way to fix this problem. Certainly, we would appreciate your support in correcting the error that occurred last year and ask you to support the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1093? Seeing none, we will open to committee questions. Questions of the committee? Seeing none, we will close questions and go to committee discussion and or action. Representative Olson.
I move do pass.
We have a motion to pass by Representative Olson, seconded by Representative Sorensen. Comments on that motion?
I think Mr. Wilcox has explained it very well. It's just a cleanup thing that needs to happen, and I'm all for it.
Other comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Van Gierpen.
I hate to put the bill in jeopardy, but I'm wondering if there would be advantage to put an emergency clause on this so it takes effect right away versus waiting until July.
I see somebody nodding their head. No.
I don't think it's necessary.
Okay. No other comments? If not, we have a do pass motion on House Bill 1093. Opposed, aye. Or in favor, aye. Opposed, no. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Cronin.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Schrempp.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Sorensen.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Van Gierpen.
Aye.
Verschio.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have 12 members voting yes.
Motion carried. 1093 will go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Do I have a motion consent by Street?
Second.
Second by Cronin? No, Hoffman. Is that okay with you? You don't want a chance to pitch a bill on the House floor? I won't stand in your way. All in favor of consent calendar, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. 1093 is on consent. Yes.
I have a question on consent. If there would have been an emergency clause placed on this bill, would it then still have been able to be placed on consent? Question, thank you.
Can you answer that? No, it would not. Okay, we're on to House Bill 1104, authorize a sentencing court to impose consecutive revocations of hunting, fishing, or trapping privileges under certain conditions. Are there proponents to House Bill 1104?
Pat Starr when I get the cord caught around my button. Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Members of the committee, my name is Representative Brian Gosch, District 32, Rapid City. I bring before you House Bill 1104. This is a bill which amends current statutes and allows for consecutive revocations of hunting privileges under certain circumstances. Currently, as you look at the law, as you can see in the bill, there are certain delineated activities that require a suspension of the a revocation of the hunting privileges. If you have any one of these violations, you have your hunting privileges revoked. If you have multiple violations, like you would in the criminal code, you could have consecutive sentencing. One thought anyway, until the case of State versus Kramer, which is a 2008 South Dakota Supreme Court case where that was tested. The circuit court ordered consecutive revocation of hunting privileges for multiple violations. In that case, the defendant had been hunting without the license. He had his privileges revoked already. He was hunting from the roadway, hunting big game from the roadway, and he'd also been trespassing. So the circuit court, under existing statute, attempted to enhance, if you will, or impose consecutive revocation of hunting privileges, but ultimately the Supreme Court said they could not do that under that statute. That statute only dealt with sentencing for imprisonment. If this bill were passed, it would give the judge the discretion. He wouldn't have to, but he'd have the discretion to order consecutive revocations of hunting privileges in situations which are egregious or you have multiple violations. Because the judge would have the discretion then in innocent situations where there are multiple violations, for example, maybe an inexperienced hunter shoots a mule deer instead of the whitetail, and in fact maybe shoots two mule deer. As he shoots one runs over the hill and he doesn't realize it went down, shoots another one, doesn't think it went down and goes over the hill, and then shoots another one. And I know of a situation where this actually happened. He finally hits the third one, comes up to it, sees that the third one is down, walks over the hill and sees there are two more down. Then he finds out that they're all mule deer and none are whitetail. Now, in that case, that'd be a more innocent multiple violation situation where a judge would not likely impose a consecutive revocation of hunting privileges. I think this would be an important tool for the judge to have for those, you know, either out-of-state hunters or in-state hunters with egregious violations where they're willfully poaching multiple game or other violations. And again, the judge wouldn't have to automatically do the consecutive, but he or she would have the authority to do so. With that, I'll stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other proponents to House Bill 1104?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Emmett Kieser. I'm the Assistant Director of Field Operations for the Division of Wildlife at Game Fish and Parks. We're appearing today in support of House Bill 1104. I think Representative Gosch did an excellent job of providing the background with the Supreme Court case and the decision. And I would, however, like to, I guess, point out that the revocation of privileges itself really provides a significant deterrent to willful violators. And we've known for many years, and in fact, actually have empirical data where we've conducted surveys of hunters and also talk with both hunters and who don't violate and those who violate. And both groups will tell you that the revocation of privileges provides a significant deterrent to them, and I think they certainly feel that overall provides a significant deterrent to those who would consider violating some of these more significant statutes. So the other thing I would want to point out in a couple of sections of the bill, sections 3 and 4, deal with hunter trespass and situations where hunters are made aware through signage and so forth, but choose to discharge a firearm too near a occupied dwelling or schoolhouse or church. And in those situations, with the trespass and shooting too close to buildings, there is provisions for revocation. And I do want to point those out specifically because I know there are a number of landowners on the committee, and those are important provisions in the bill that, again, deter folks who don't want to follow the rules. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll also stand by and be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Mr. Kieser, other proponents? Other proponents to House Bill 1104? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1104? No opponents to House Bill 1104? With that, we'll waive rebuttal and go to committee questions. Representative Verschio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This would be for Representative Gosch. This is pretty involved, so I hope you're prepared for this one. I'm sure you are. What did you do with your three deer?
it did occur on our land, but it wasn't anyone from our hunting group.
Thank you. I couldn't pass that one up.
Other questions? Representative Sorensen.
Question for the sponsor.
Yes.
You did a good job, Mr. Chairman. You did a good job for explaining where it wouldn't be, you know, example where hopefully a judge wouldn't use this in the case of the three deer of your friend. But could you give us maybe at least one example of where you think this, what would be a classic example where this would be a good law?
Well, I think the Supreme Court case of State versus Kramer, everybody thought, who all except for the defendant in that case, thought that was a good example. Here on one day, he was hunting without a hunting license. He had his hunting privileges previously revoked. He was also hunting big game from the roadway, and he was trespassing on private property.
Three different violations.
So something like that, or you know, maybe it's an example of an angler who has previously had his hunting privileges revoked, and he's ice fishing, and he has 12 poles in the water. He's also he also has 40 walleye in the bucket, or maybe it's three paddlefish. That'd be a better example, because that would be an example where the hunting privileges would be revoked.
Follow up? Sure.
So right now, each one of those, what you're saying is each one of those abuses of the law would hold a separate penalty, and what you're asking is that simultaneously they all be put together and the seriousness of the crime would increase.
That's essentially correct. Each one of those in and of itself would allow for the revocation of the hunting privilege. If there are multiple violations under current law, the Supreme Court has said you can't issue a 2 or 3 year revocation of hunting privileges. You can only do the 1 year.
Thank you.
Representative Street.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So these violations could all be in the context of one incident. Is that correct?
They could be, yes. If I understood your question correctly.
In other words, Mr. Chairman, if I might, you don't have to have a previous conviction on the books. You don't have to have been caught doing something else. Like, you don't have to be have had your license revoked for another offense previously. You might have a perfectly clean record up until this point of multiple offenses.
Mr. Chair.
Is that clear?
Thank you, Representative. Yes, that's correct. You wouldn't have to have a previous violation to get the consecutive revocations.
Thank you.
Other questions? No other questions? Thank you, Brian. With that, we will open up to committee discussion and or action. Representative Cronin.
I move do pass.
We have a motion to pass by Cronin, second by Vercio. Comments on that motion? Mr. Street, you have a comment?
I'm going to vote no on this just because of the fact that it can all happen in the context of one series of violations that occur basically at one time. Not that I'm against the idea that some people don't deserve a little stiffer penalty, but that would be the reason for my no vote. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Representative Van Gerpen.
I understand what Representative Street is pointing to, and I appreciate him bringing this out. If this was a subsequent arrest and conviction, it'd be a little different issue, but when we're taking two or three things at the same time, two or three violations at the same time, I'm not quite sure where I'm at on this at this point.
Fortunately, your name starts with a V, so you can have a little time. Other comments? Representative Olson.
I have one. If this party had been caught on my land trespassing, this bill would be the least thing that he had to worry about. But I'm going to support this, much to the surprise of Mr. Keezer.
Other comments? And I kind of agree with where Representative Street is going. I've had, I've seen guys that inadvertently kind of stack it on themselves
knowing they're not even in the right, or not even knowing they're in the right place, and does concern me that they could have several years stacked on no hunting because of one incident. So thought, I guess, vote your conscience, and you'll see how I vote. But but I understand, you know, how you could be opposed to it. Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to vote yes on this bill because I think that a hunter that is primarily willfully violating the game laws, and he continuously does so, this may be somewhat of an inhibitor to that. However, on the instance that Representative Street just addressed, I think that it may give a person the idea that I'm going to do all I can now, because if I get caught with all these different things in my, I got two deer and an antelope in my truck and five pheasants and a couple of geese, I just as well go as far as I can go because it's not going to be held against me. So I think that it's a good law, and I will vote yes because of this. I, to some degree, we may be encouraging someone then, if they are going to break the law, to go as far as they can because it's only going to count once. Thank you.
Of course, I will point out the civil penalties will stack up severely on every count that you have, too. Representative Hoffman.
I'm going to support this bill, and the reason being is, as in a bank robbery spree of crimes, you always have tapes to go back and look. But in wildlife violations, if you shoot animals and let them lay, within a couple of weeks, it's impossible to tell really what happened to them. You don't have bullets. You can't get ballistics. And this, I think, is a great deterrent. There are a lot of people out there creating a lot of havoc in the realm of wildlife, and there are some people that should not be out hunting. I mean, I've caught people on my land doing some horrific things. I'd urge you to support this. I see nothing but good coming out of this bill, and I don't see anything. The law-abiding person's never going to be affected by this. So we're making laws for 3% of the population. I'm going to vote for it. Thank you.
Other comments? Representative Olson.
I would just like to remind the committee that all this does is affect their hunting privileges. It doesn't lock them up. Hunting is a privilege, and if you're going to abuse it, you better be prepared to pay the piper.
Seeing no other comments, we have a motion to pass. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Cronin.
Aye.
Frerichs.
No.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Schrempp.
No.
Sly.
Aye.
Sorensen.
Aye.
Street.
No.
Van Gerpen.
No.
Verschio.
Aye.
Bruner.
No.
Mr. Chairman, we have 7 yes and 5 no.
Are you sure?
Yes.
6.
7 yes, 5 no.
1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, you're right. Sorry. Sorry for questioning you. It's got to be the glasses. Motion carried. House Bill 1104 will go to the floor with a due pass. Thank you, Representative Gosch. With that, we will go to House Bill 1129. Are there proponents to House Bill 1129? We can skip this for now. Would a page go find Representative Nygaard? I don't know where he'd be. Do you know? Yeah. Yes, there is. Ask him if he'd like to pitch his bill. We'll move out. We'll move to Senate Bill 51. And move 1129 down to the bottom of the calendar. With that, we will go to Senate Bill 51, provide for a drug screening program for certain applicants and employees of the Wildland Fire Suppression Division. Are there proponents to Senate Bill 51? Welcome, Mr. Secretary.
Morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Levin, and I'm your Secretary of Agriculture. We do have some handouts available if the page could grab them and distribute them to the committee members.
As soon as she gets through getting somebody some coffee. Give each one of us one. No, pass. Open it up and pass them out. There should be one for everybody in there.
Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here before you today to respectfully urge the committee's support on Senate Bill 51, and it's a bill that would establish a drug screening program for employees of the South Dakota Department of Agriculture Wildland Fire Division. As you committee members had the opportunity to hear when we presented to you in front of the session, one of the missions of the South Dakota Department of Agriculture is firefighting. And currently, within the state of South Dakota, our firefighters are operating, you know, heavy and dangerous equipment, often in some very rough and rugged terrain. They're making critical life safety decisions and working as a team when they're working in either the Black Hills or even in the grassland areas of South Dakota fighting fire. And what this bill will do was will give the department the authority, much like exists in other life safety sensitive positions within state government, to do a drug screening program. Now, this isn't anything new. As a matter of fact, we copied the contents of this bill from authorities that are granted to other state agencies, and it's for some examples. Law enforcement officers obviously fall within this realm. Department of Corrections, custody staff, people that work for the Human Services Center, people that work for the State Veterans Home, for example, are an example of groups of individuals that are working in sensitive positions that the state has felt fit that we have this extra layer of safety and security in place. In addition, a number of our federal partners that we work with, for example, the Department of Interior, which would encompass like the Bureau of Indian Affairs that we do firefighting with. This is all par for the course for what these agencies are doing in their firefighting efforts. And perhaps, Mr. Chairman, maybe the simplest way of going through this would be to just walk through just a few of the key points within the bill itself. I think it highlights mechanically what we're doing here. First, in Section 1, there's really two parts to it. Working with the Bureau personnel, this bill gives that authority to the Bureau personnel, that for people that we are attempting to hire or people that are working for the department, particularly on our hand crews, we would have the ability to do drug screening. So either when we're hiring individuals as a way to deal with this on the front end or upon reasonable suspicion of drug use, we would be able to do a drug screening test. Section 2, it relates to the notice provision. In other words, this is something that has to be noticed, something that has to be published. Every employee is aware of it before they even apply, and they're aware of the rules of the workplace while they are working there. Section 3 of the bill is a standard confidentiality section. Everyone that submits to this test, the results are certainly held confidential. And Section 5 then applies to the penalty for disclosure, and that penalty would apply to those state employees that either knowingly or intentionally disclose or fails to protect the medical information declared to be confidential in any tests. If any state employee violates that, the penalty is listed in Section 4 of the bill, Class 2 misdemeanor, which in South Dakota is 30 days in jail and or a $500 fine. And then Section 5 gives the Bureau personnel the authority to promulgate the rules. And there's a listing of 1 through 8 that are listed down at the bottom. Again, this is standard. We use the same language that the Department of Health is using and for the committee members' reference. South Dakota Codified Law 1-36A-24 is an example of what the Department of Health does within their agency to deal with these issues. So that's the bill in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman. And I would certainly stand by for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Mr. Secretary, are there other proponents? Other proponents of Senate Bill 51?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Joe Lowe. I'm the Division Director for the South Dakota Division of Wildland Fire. I feel this bill is really necessary. It is not anything that is any different than any other fire agency does. Our BLM partners, and BIA, and our all the DOI agencies and the federal USDA Forest Service has that ability to do this. One thing we have talked about that we haven't talked about yet is that all of our grants, our federal grants that come through, have a clause that states we will provide for a drug-free workplace. And we want to ensure that we do, and we do not want to have put in jeopardy any of our federal funding for that. So I am in favor of it. I brought it forth to the secretary, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you had them. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents of Senate Bill 51? Seeing none, other opponents to Senate Bill 51. Seeing no opponents, we will open to committee questions. Representative Sly.
This is for Mr. Lowe.
Yes, Representative.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The question is in regard to the grants that you've received, and it's stating that it has to be a drug-free. How have you gotten around that in the past, or has it just been recently that has started coming forward, that it has to be drug-free and some accountability for it?
No, all federal grants that come down from the USDA Forest Service, which is the agency that is the grantor, have that condition applied to them. And they've always come that way to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, Representative Kopp?
Yeah, this question's for Joe Lowe also.
Needed my morning exercise here.
Mr. Lowe, at this juncture, I would like to ask, why now are you just coming up with this bill? Why wasn't this introduced several years ago or even longer? Why now are you coming up with this bill?
Well, I can tell you, honestly, we hire young seasonal firefighters, and some do good things and some do bad things. And we had, it was last year that we had a, we found some drugs in one of the state pickups in the hand crew, with a hand crew vehicle, and brought in the drug dogs and Department of Criminal Investigation, and we nipped it in the bud. And we do not have the ability. I was appalled when I went downstairs as a fire chief and asked Bureau personnel if we had the ability to drug test right there on the spot. They said absolutely not. They said that we, for us, you had to be in a safety-sensitive position. And I was standing there in a Class A fire department uniform, and I said, well, I think we are. We were precluded from that. The danger to the state also is, can you imagine a 20-person hand crew in a vehicle going through an intersection and somebody on drugs hitting a pedestrian or doing whatever? This state would suffer. There would be no defense for that. And this bill is the reason we're doing this, like all the other agencies. It's a proactive bill. It's not, we don't want to be reactive like we were before and behind the power curve. So we want to nip this in the bud. We take it very seriously. I hold firefighters and police officers to a higher standard. And for me, I'd like to see this bill pass, because it puts us in jeopardy otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. No further questions.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, we'll close the questions and go to committee discussion and or action. Representative Van Gerpen. We have a motion to pass by Van Gerpen, second by Hoffman. Comments on that motion?
Yes, there is. It kind of goes back to my years of the military training, and I remember how often it was grilled into us that you are not responsible just for yourself, but you are also responsible for your members of your squadron and of your brigade or whatever. And the same thing applies, I believe, to our firefighters, that they are not responsible just for their own life. They are responsible for their teammates that are in the fire with them to fight that fire. And so I believe this is good legislation. And as the illustration presented by Mr. Lowe gives us adequate reason in itself to pass this legislation.
Thank you. Other comments? Representative Cobb.
Yeah, the State Division of Wildland Fire Suppression is my old alma mater. I spent about 30 years with these guys, and I can tell you that one of the closest times I came to losing my life was with an individual who was high. And this is extremely important because it's a dirty, dangerous job. These people are working with helicopters, air tankers, compressed air foam systems, chainsaws, falling trees, not to mention the topography and the vehicles that they're bringing to the scene. So there's any question in my mind the need for this bill, and I wholly support it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? One second. Representative Nygaard, your bill is up next. It's the last one on. Do you need to be? I know you've got an important bill up in Health and Human Services. Okay, if you need to, because we've got plenty of time in our committee, we can just stand down for a little bit, but we should be done with this one and move on to yours real quick. Thank you. Representative Olson.
Well, I just had a quick comment. I'm an EMT with the Harding County Ambulance and a volunteer firefighter for the Sorm and Riva Fire Department. I've sat in on several of these really bad fires where we've had to call in these guys. Those are very dangerous situations if everybody is stone cold sober. I can't emphasize the need for this enough. I will definitely be voting for it.
Thank you. Other comments? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on Senate Bill 51. Ask the Secretary to call the roll. All in favor, aye. Opposed, no.
Representatives Cronin.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Hoffman.
Aye.
Kopp.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Schrempf.
Aye.
Sly.
Aye.
Sorensen.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Banneman.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have 12 yes.
Motion carried. Senate Bill 51 will go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Okay. I think I'll assign this to Representative Kopp, and because he's had the experience there, and allow him to carry this on the floor, and we'll waive the consent idea. With that, we will go to House Bill 1129, require landowner participation or approval of certain agreements relating to carbon sequestration. Are there proponents to House Bill 1129?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Thank you very much. My name is Eldon Nygaard from District 17, and I bring before you today House Bill 1129 for your consideration. This came to me as a result of a constituent who had found out that he had a renter who had 2 years left on his contract, who 1 year prior had entered into a five-year agreement for carbon sequestration on his land based on ag practices that were really a result of over 100 years of farming in the family history of the owner of this land and his family. And he met with the lessee, and they reached an agreement, and they split the carbon sequestration amount 50-50. This bill would provide that any contract in South Dakota for carbon sequestration based on land practices, that is, raising grasses or rotating crops in a manner that lessens the amount of carbon emissions, would require that the land owner of record, the legal owner as opposed to the beneficial owner, the lessee, would have notice or have be party to the contract. It does not dictate if the landowner receives any certain proportion of that payment. That would be left to the agreement of the parties.
A very similar situation occurs in CRP, Conservation Reserve Program, under the FSA, which is a Farm Service Agency, under our farm program in the United States, wherein if you have a CRP, you're not allowed to sign that contract as a renter unless you also have the landowner sign that contract, and then you make the decision between you and the renter how you're going to divide that. Now, I realize that there are a couple farm organizations that may or may not follow this practice. I suggest that we're heading in the wrong direction, and South Dakota could enact public policy this session that would redirect that direction so that landowner rights are protected in this great state of South Dakota, something that we've all held near and dear, both West River and East River. And it's a very simple bill. I encourage your consideration of it, and I'll stand by for any further questions.
Thank you, Representative. Are there other proponents to House Bill 1129? Proponents, House Bill 1129? Seeing none, other opponents to House Bill 1129?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Johnny Kirstein, South Dakota Farmers Union. South Dakota Farmers Union respectfully opposes this legislation. Our interpretation of the law is that it would hinder the landowner's rights. Landowners or lessees should be able to have the right to lease land for any legal purpose that they see fitting for their operation. South Dakota Farmers Union feels that the government should abstain from involvement in landowners' rights. We feel this is in the best interest of the lessee and the leasor and cannot benefit from government intervention. While we do regret that bad deals will happen, we feel that good deals also happen, and they can be profitable for both parties and the furtherment of carbon sequestration. We urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there other opponents to House Bill 1129?
Mr. Chairman, good morning, members of the committee. Mike Held, I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Farm Bureau and also the executive officer of the organization. We rise in opposition to House Bill 1129. We think it's unnecessary. South Dakota Farm Bureau has been involved with a company called Aggregate for the last 5 years, enrolling farmers in this state in carbon sequestration contracts. Aggregate is a not-for-profit company that's operated by the Iowa Farm Bureau. They operate in a couple dozen states throughout the Midwest and give farmers an opportunity, give operators an opportunity to derive a revenue stream from the practices that the operator has on that land for the carbon that is being sequestered. I have two people on my staff that report to me and actually are involved in the day-to-day enrollment of farmers in the Aggregate program, providing the documentation and also providing the signing an agreement, a five-year contract, that they will conduct the proper practices and management decisions on that ground going forward. And I think that's a key part of this. With all due respect to Representative Nygaard, he talked about what has happened in the past. A carbon sequestration contract causes that operator to maintain or change management practices on crop ground, particularly tillage practices, on non-crop ground management practices, and a range management plan to that range, so that it can be identified as sequestering carbon into the future, not in what has gone on in the past. So they have to change their practices and follow very specific details. We feel 1129 is not necessary for the state to intrude or intervene in that relationship. We already require on the contract that the operator signs with us Some of them are landowner operators, some of them are renter or lease operators, and you need to make that distinction. We already require in our application that they list the name of the landowner, address, and phone number. Our people that sign the contracts have a conversation with every one of them, encouraging non-owners to have a conversation with the owner. We feel 1129 sets a precedent that might lead to a slippery slope, and we're concerned about that. What about other practices an operator decides to choose in his operation, like the use of GMO seeds? We all know that there are people out there that have some concern and some that are very vocally opposed to the use of GMO seeds. Would it be proper then for the next step for the state to get involved in that relationship? What about the use of ag chemical protectant products that farmers use for weed, insect, and disease control? Again, people out here that have some concern with the use of those products, is the state going to interject in that? We feel this 1129 would open the door, and we will have requests that those kind of arrangements be made, also dictated by state law. Thank you. We oppose 1129. We think it's not necessary.
Thank you. Are there other opponents to House Bill 1129? Seeing none, we will go to committee questions. Sure, I'm sorry. I apologize for that. I was trying to move it along for your benefit, and then I left you out.
And there I go, complaining right away. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eldon Niger, District 17. Of course, the opponents have made the case for me, and we've said the first fellow testified that he'd made some good deals and some bad deals. The next said that we've been doing this for 5 years. So we're catching this at a time when perhaps we could still direct it in the right direction. The oldest argument of all, the slippery slope argument that has been applied so often in these chambers and in others around this building, has been tendered. Carbon sequestration is in fact based on the history of the land and changing that history. It's the change that goes forward that results in sequestering carbon. That's why it makes it imperative to involve the landowner, because that is the continuity. Renters come and go. The most common rental agreement in the state of South Dakota is year to year. Most of you know that. So 5-year contracts don't really get it, especially when the landowner is left, if the landowner is left out of that. And I'm glad to hear that Farm Bureau has a spot where they put the landowner on there. It wouldn't take much to implement this law then. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you. Now, are there any questions? Representative Van Gerpen.
If I could call my good colleague, Representative Nygaard, back to the chair. Representative Nygaard, if there are concerns like this on the part of the landowner, couldn't he or she address those in the contract that they set up between the renter and themselves? So that would be in the contract, and the renter would know ahead of time what the wishes of the landowner were.
Mr. Chairman. Mm-hmm. Mr. Van Gerpen, that is a good idea. The example I gave you initially was one where the landlord expected that to be done, didn't catch it until well over 1 year after the landowner or land renter was receiving $4,800 a year in carbon sequestration, unbeknownst to them, and thus altering his practices on the land without consultation with the landowner.
Other questions? Other questions? I have a question for Mr. Held. You stated that you've been involved in a lot of these contracts. If a renter were to, with a 3-year lease, were to enter into a 5-year contract, lease is up, it's not renewed, and the landowner decides, he doesn't want to follow that contract, what happens?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding would be that not only would the contract be null and void because the current operator is not meeting the aspects of the contract, but that the operator who signed the contract would have to pay all of the money back that he received over the 3 years that he operated the under the carbon sequestration contract.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Sorensen.
Probably for the sponsor, Mr. Representative Nygaard. Do any other states, in your research, do any other states have legislation like this, as far as you know?
I'll be candid with you, and I have not done as much research as I should have. I actually had a file downstairs that had some of that information. The research that I had done revolved Colorado, and Colorado has a different organization that does carbon sequestration contracts, and they do an in-depth study of the land. They do soil analysis. They make sure they involve the landowner. In fact, they won't do a contract without it. You know, we have two farm service organizations in the state, farmer member organizations. One who just testified has a good relationship with the landowners and requires them to be party to it, or well, not be party to it, but be notified, or they know who they are so they can contact them, and the other does not. In Colorado, I can testify that they do require that the landowner is part of it.
Other questions? Representative Sly?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a question for information about carbon sequestration. Anyone that knows the answer can answer it. You talked about, maybe for Representative Nygaard, might be, if you know, and if not. Thank you. The dollars that you talked about are being paid, is that based on the size of the property, or is it based on just a set amount? And then is that federal dollars, or where do those dollars come from?
Mr. Chairman. I'll attempt to answer that, and then I'll stand ready to be corrected, perhaps by Mr. Held. It's based on the acreage, and the amount, they'll come up with an amount, just like we do in CRP, where it's determined due to soil type and what the farming history has, what they're going to bid for that land. And the money comes from the, in the one case, Farmers Union, the other, Farm Bureau, and they're able to then trade those credits with someone who is polluting, and so before someone gets their permit to manufacture and pollute, they have to have an offsetting amount of carbon sequestration. So it's a national program. It's gaining in popularity. It's taken a long time to get where it is today, but it's starting to move. That's why I'm concerned about it. Thank you. Does that help?
Follow up, please.
Sure.
So are those federal dollars, or are these coming from private, say, like a corporation or something that is building someplace, and then they're going to be taking out land area, and then they trade it? Is that correct? And they pay the dollars?
Mr. Chairman, they're not federal dollars. It's unlike the farm program where it is federal dollars. It is Farm Bureau, Farmers Union. In the case of down in Colorado, it's a whole different organization. And those dollars are then used to be traded to a polluter, an emitter, who balances the equation with, so it's a private transaction. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Seeing none, we will close the question. You want to stab at that question? For information purposes, I'll allow that. Sure.
Sorry, I should have jumped up sooner. The operator, when he signs the contract, we just closed our seventh pool in aggregate, the fifth one that we participated in South Dakota Farm Bureau at the end of January. The operator that signed that contract does not know what the dollars are going to be, because they're going to be put up for auction on the Chicago Climate Exchange over the next year. And as Representative Nygaard explained, then an automobile manufacturer, a steel industry, an electricity generator, somebody would go to the Chicago Climate Exchange, a completely voluntary exchange between buyers and sellers. Our company, Aggregate, would pool X number of tons of carbon and put them on the market, say, 1st of March. And then those tons are up for bid by everybody that wants to bid, and then that bid is determined at that day of the market. So the operator does not know what the dollar amount is going to be. He does know by geographic maps across the country what his tons per acre, and that's how it's measured in tons of carbon per acre per year, and that varies in South Dakota and eastern South Dakota, common for corn and soybean land to sequester somewhere in the neighborhood of about 6/10 of a ton per acre, and those are aggregated with other producers and sold. The market has had tremendous volatility, as have it's a commodity market, and as all the commodity markets have had tremendous volatility. Last summer, early fall, carbon was selling for as much as $7 a ton. We have had periods in the recent month or two where carbon was selling for as little as $2 a ton. I haven't looked in the last couple of weeks what it is today. I couldn't tell you. Just for information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, can I have leeway to just respond?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, in an answer to Representative Sly's question, now that's how Farm Bureau does it. Farmers Union, however, does give you a set amount, and then they probably go back to a board in Chicago or wherever and sell that, but they tell you right up front. So there's a difference. I've been familiar with three entities, Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, and the entity in Colorado, and they all do it different. That's why I feel we have need for this legislation.
Thank you. Other questions? No other comments. We passed questions?
Yeah.
Okay. We're in comments. Do you have a comment? Just don't look at me like that. Representative Hoffman.
Thank you. I'm listening to the debate this morning. I've been sold down a different street, going along with everyone and finding my own path on this as a landowner. I find that it would be totally against everything I believe in for something like this to happen, and Representative Nygaard actually sold me on this. But to put it out on the public forum for discussion, I don't believe that there will ever be a great amount of carbon ever sequestered on top of the ground, and if I can pass this legislation, it would make it harder, any regulations for that. I think if you pump carbon down underground and can physically store it, you may have a chance of actually holding it out of the environment for some period of time. I'm not sure how long, but I know that anytime you put anything on the Chicago Board of Merck, it is subject to the whims and vigors of very rich oil tycoons in Saudi Arabia to manipulate that price. And I am going to vote for this just for the purposes of, I think any time you can regulate something that I don't believe works, I think it's a good thing. Therefore, I thank you.
Thank you, I think. Representative Urshiel.
I guess for much the same reason I might be thinking of voting no on this. I just want to point out, though, as to the representative's last argument, is that this bill does nothing to address any pre-notification of how much the carbon is going to be per acre is going to be worth. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Van Gerpen.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose this legislation primarily because I really hate to see us get involved in the or intervene in the farmer's relationship with our landowner. Again, I think if there are issues, those are issues to be discussed at the time that they draw up the contract. And as Mr. Held raised the question, you know, what's next? And so for those reasons. And I also think that in most cases there might be a case or two where it does not happen, but I would think if I was a renter, I would want to be in contact with my landowner, because if I was not keeping my landowner pleased and happy, I know what would happen at the end of the current contract, and that is I'd lose the opportunity to farm that land.
So I think that there are some built-in protective measures there that we do not need this particular legislation, and therefore, I guess I got to wait to make a motion.
Yes, that'd be good. Other comments, Representative Fricks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm opposed to this legislation, and I really want to make sure that the committee keeps the focus on the operator, because that's where this program is aimed at and targeted for, is the operator of the land. The operator receives the rewards from this program because of their practices that they do to manage that land. When the lease is agreed upon, that's the time when some terms could be discussed between the operator and the landowner. After that lease agreement is accomplished, with in respect to not damaging the land, the operator has quite a bit of leeway to determine how they want to perform their farming practices under the terms of the lease. And so I would say this is more of an operator issue, and I'm against this legislation, and I hope that the committee would join me in supporting the operators, because they're the true beneficiaries to the program, and I don't think that this legislation would obviously it wouldn't help the operators. So thank you.
Representative Veneman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House Bill 1129 to the 41st day.
I have a motion to defer to the 41st day by Veneman, second by Representative Olson. Comments on that motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I agree with the previous speaker. I mean, there's just a lot of things. I think we just need to take personal responsibility with this, with the starting with the first step, when the landowner and the operator, that first agreement, that's where these things need to be ironed out. The carbon sequestration is not a new item. Those things need to be ironed out there. The companies that are coming in and doing this, I think that they, you know, they certainly should be aware of the problems between a landowner and an operator if they're not, you know, talking to the right person. For those reasons, I just think we need to send this bill to the 41st day.
Other comments? Representative Sorensen.
I want to thank Representative Nygaard for bringing this bill. I do see, I'm one of many, many farmers who doesn't put together a written contract. We go by something that's even greater. That's a handshake. Automatically, issues like this don't come up between landowner and the renter, the operator. And I do see where five-year contracts, where, you know, the carbon sequestration is five-year contracts, and most of us go by 1 year. So this bill would probably help solve some of that. At the flip side, I also have a few problems with it. It is a hassle, and I don't necessarily like to have to find or try to contact my landowner, my landlord, when they're spending part of their time in Idaho or Arizona. It's difficult, and this is one more thing where I have to track them down. And I maybe compare it a little bit to CRP, even though that's a federal program. That money did not go to landowners, and we didn't have to contact landowners. And I think in the end I would end up opposing this. Thank you.
Thank you. Other comments? Representative Kopp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ronald Reagan once said, government isn't the answer, it's the problem. And I believe that we should leave this up to the interests of the farmer to decide how he's going to do it, without us trying to get involved in the situation. So I would agree with Representative Veneman that we move this to the 41st day. Thank you.
Other comments? Seeing none, we have a motion to defer to the 41st day. I would ask the Secretary to call the roll. All in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Representatives Cronin.
Aye.
Frericks.
Aye.
Hoffman.
No.
Kopp.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Schrempf.
Aye.
Sly. Sorensen.
Aye.
Street.
Aye.
Van Gerpen.
Aye.
Verschio.
Aye.
Vanneman.
Aye.
Bruner.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have 12 yes and 1 no.
Motion carried. House Bill 1129 is deferred to the 41st state. That clears our agenda for today, and we have a motion to adjourn would be in order. Representative Street, second by Representative Olson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried. We are adjourned.